Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Dori Shafrir.
And I'm Kate Spencer.
And we are not experts.
Nope, but we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
And just a few reminders before we get going. You can always visit our website, forever35podcast.com, for links to everything we mention on the show. You can follow us on Twitter and on Instagram. Twitter is at forever35pod, and Instagram is at forever35podcast. And you can join the Forever 35 Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/forever35podcast. The password there is serums. We also have a voicemail number at 781-591-0390. And our email is forever35podcast@gmail.com.
You know, before we get into our own BS, should we just take a moment to honor Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Let's do that.
I mean, I don't know if it's a moment of silence or this is an unplanned honoring. But I think we both want to acknowledge her passing.
Yes.
That's all.
Thank you.
Well, no, we had just recorded an episode and then she passed away and you and I kind of texted back and forth on if we should like record an emergency podcast intro. And, you know, I think the impact that both her life and her passing has on both of us is significant. And I think it is for a lot of our listeners too.
Oh, for sure. And we just wanted you all to know that we're thinking about that and her passing has weighed heavily on both of us and we're mourning her and mourning her legacy and ready to fight for what's next.
That's right, Dori. We are going to fucking get back in there. Getting back in that ring.
Yep.
I cried on Friday afternoon and then I was like, Saturday, I was like, let's fucking go.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't mean to curse so much. Anyway, she was heroic. Like,
yes.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, on less meaningful conversation topics, I'm grappling with self-care whilst injured.
Yeah. Tell me what happened.
I think I mentioned this briefly because we recorded our last episode right after it had happened, but I fell. I rolled my ankle. It turns out it's sprained. It's very swollen and bruised. And I think I've also bruised my tailbone, but I'm going back to the doctor to get a follow-up and hopefully get a referral for a tailbone specialist. Because turns out what's going on is probably like there's something going on. So I got to get my bones looked at. I think it's probably just bruised, but I'm having a lot of bizarro symptoms that I've never had before after falling on my butt. And so, you know, it's a little weird. Like, it's always unsettling when your body is doing something that it's never done before, you know?
Totally.
And you don't know if it's just like a casual symptom that will pass with time, or if it's like your body is trying to flag, like they're sending you an urgent email, you know, yes. those emails yes. and then following up on text to make sure you got it. Like, I don't know if that's what my body is doing. So I don't know, but you know, and I get a little like, I guess the doctor to me is the self-care, like making sure I'm on top of it, but also not letting my like hypochondria take over.
Is it hypochondria or is it just like health anxiety?
It's health anxiety. I don't know if those things are the same or not, but my anxiety likes to latch on to things and it will latch on to health big time. Big time. So I got to kind of just, you know, manage that. But it's also hard. Like my movement is a lot of my self-care. And right now my ankle is sprained and it doesn't hurt to walk on it, but it's very swollen for me.
Yeah.
So I'm doing a lot of icing. I guess icing is my self-care, but I'm not enjoying it.
Yeah, that's hard. And it's hard to kind of shift your thinking from, okay, well, movement was really my self-care, something that I love, to like, okay, my body's telling me I need to like dial it back, like way back.
Yeah.
Like your body is telling you this, as you kind of said. And so, yeah, you do need to honor that, but it's really hard.
But I don't want to honor it.
I know. It's annoying. I know. It's really annoying and really hard.
I mean, look, as we always say, as it is a privilege to get old, it's a privilege to be able to take care of my body.
I think like you, I do enjoy working out. I do enjoy exercising. And it is really frustrating when, for whatever reason, we can't do that.
Yes. And I'm very grateful. I've been working with a trainer in classes, but they give you individualized like coaching. And she is helping me figure out like how I can do lifting without, you know, fucking with my ankle. Because I've really gotten into doing weight training. It's been really fun and really gratifying. And, you know, we now have a bunch of weights at home. So,
yeah.
I'm hoping I can figure out ways to like chill on the foot, but also keep my physical body engaged and stimulated so that I can sleep at night. Oh my gosh, Dory.
What?
I'm reading your notes and you made Pamela Salzman's challah bread.
Yes.
I love Pamela Salzman.
I know.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Tell us everything.
Okay, so we've moved on from flu shots.
Yeah, look, turning a corner.
Okay. So as I believe I mentioned on Friday's episode, which was the first night of Rosh Hashanah, I said I was going to try to make a challah. And I was very disdainful, although from a place of like insecurity about Instagram challah moms, as I called them. And turns out, I could make a challah and it looked pretty great on Instagram.
So you are.
I'm going to eat my challah words.
Oh my God.
If you will. And I wouldn't say it was like totally smooth sailing. I had to throw out the first batch of dough because I'd read the instructions, but I hadn't fully like processed the instructions. And I did a bunch of things wrong. And I know with baking, like you really need to follow everything very carefully. So I was like, I could already tell that the dough wasn't kind of what it wasn't doing what it was supposed to be doing. And I was just like, I'm going to start over. It's like when you're watching Great British Bake Off. Oh, you know, you don't watch Great British Bake Off.
No, but I am like I am aware of it. I do understand that it's British people baking and I've watched some of it.
Well, it's just like sometimes like, you overbake your sponge and you're just like, I don't really have time to do this, but I have to start my sponge from scratch again because the sponge is the foundation of my cake.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I do. I follow.
Yep. So that was kind of going through my head. So I threw out that dough, which was sad. I probably could have salvaged it in some way, but like I'm not an advanced enough baker to know that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would.
So, started over.
Okay.
But, you know, I've never baked I've never really baked bread before. I mean, maybe in like home economics class in seventh grade. Does home economics still exist? Like as a thing?
I don't know. I never took it, and that was not an option for me.
Well, in ye old public school, you had to take home economics, and I mean, it was like, here, bake some bread and sew a pillow, and like all these other random things.
I'll find out when my kids go to middle school. I feel like it kind of happens in middle school, right?
Yes. The bread baking occurred in seventh grade. So like
it sounds awesome.
Middle school.
I would love to bake bread at school.
Totally. I mean, like, yes.
And also way to introduce people to a skill that could be their job someday that isn't just like doing math, even though it is kind of doing math.
It is kind of doing math. Exactly. I think I learned, I feel like I took to woodworking more, but I did enjoy home ec. I'm not going to lie. Anyway, point being, I've not really baked bread very much in my life, if at all. So it's very exciting to like prove the dough.
Yes.
And see it rise.
Yeah. It's cool. Isn't
it? Oh my gosh, it rose. It worked.
I know.
And then with challah, you do a second proof. So you do a second rise. And so I did that. But also you have to, for the second rise, you have to braid the bread. You have to shape the bread. I was very nervous about this. Very nervous. And I had to, there's like one piece of dough that I tried to like reshape and it wouldn't reshape. And then someone on Instagram told me that if you wait 10 minutes, then you can usually reshape it. And I was like, oh, I wish I had known that, but whatever, it didn't matter. And I was like, oh my gosh, my strands are different sizes. This is going to look terrible.
Did it matter?
I had to watch, and then it ended up not mattering. I did watch a YouTube video, which I will link to in the show notes, of how to braid it, because as I discussed on Friday's episode, the Rosh Hashanah challah is round. So I was like, this seems especially complex to do a round challah. How am I going to figure out how to do it? But YouTube came to my rescue, of course. And it was very cool. It was very cool to like braid it and shape it and be like, oh my gosh, it looks like a challah.
Right. You made a challah.
I made a challah. I will say, I love me some Pamela Salzman, but I think her oven instructions were too hot. When I make it again, I'm going to try turning the oven down just a tad. I think my challah was just a tad overbaked. Like I think if Paul Hollywood was looking at it in the technical, he would be like, like he would point to the line above the crust and be like, it's overbaked.
Paul Hollywood, that's a chef person.
It's one of the judges on
the British Bake Off.
Great British Bake Off, Kate. Listen, I actually, do you watch much reality competition? You don't.
I mean, I do partake in a Bachelor franchise or two.
Yeah, but like you don't really watch like cooking competition shows, do you?
No, I have with my kids. I mean, I don't watch much TV at all anymore. Like not because I'm too cool for TV. I just am like too lazy. So yeah, I don't. I have not.
Great British Bake Off is truly calming.
I've watched some of it. I have watched, and it's great. Again, I've watched some of it on my own, and then I watched some with my kids, and it's like very good family programming.
Yes.
It's completely benign.
Yes. So anyway, I would have put myself in like the middle of the pack in the technical.
So isn't it interesting you're getting bitten by the bread bug? Six months in the core.
Right, not the sourdough bug.
No. The challah bug.
Yeah, even Matt was impressed.
That takes a lot? Is that what you're saying?
I feel like it takes a lot. Because I feel like Matt, in like our marriage, he sees himself as the chef.
He does do a lot of like meat cooking.
Yeah, he does a lot of meat cooking. He like knows how to season things. Mm-hmm. And he was sort of like, oh, you made a challah. Oh, and it tastes like a challah. And I was like, uh-huh. And then I was like, I could do this every week.
Are you going to?
I think so. Why not? I have nothing else to do.
You're going to every Friday make a haul?
I have a lot of other things to do, but like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like all the things I have to do are in my house.
Yes, I do know. I do know what you mean. I do.
So, and challah, like the active time is not that much. Like you mix the dough, you knead the dough, but then you're proving for quite some time. And then once it's proved, you just stick it in, you do an egg wash over it and you stick it in the oven. So it's not like you don't have to be like on it the whole time. So you can be doing other things.
And you can start making it with Henry while he's at
home. Totally.
Give him a little challah dough.
He loved it. Oh my God. He was like, more carbs.
Good. Good work, Henry. That's it.
Yeah. So I don't know. So maybe I will do this every week. It seems like a nice, like it's like something I am looking forward to, like getting to bake a challah.
Oh, Tori, congratulations on finding this passion.
Thank you, Kate.
And it's rooted in your faith. I mean, what's more beautiful than that?
It's just beautiful. It's just gorgeous.
It is. I think it is. I don't know.
I'm sorry. You're seeing my like cynical, crusty old self being like, it's fine.
Look,
and you're trying to give me this like nice moment, and I'm like, nah.
Listen, you can't be from Boston and not be crusty in some way. It's just part of who our DNA.
Okay, thank you.
I would actually be weirded out if you were like, it is beautiful. Like, ugh. Who is this?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, ugh. No, I don't want you to do that.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at. And I just want to say one other unrelated thing, which is that I started watching Love Fraud on Showtime. And I don't know, did you listen to or watch Dirty John?
Of course. I listened to the whole thing. I did not. Is this the documentary or?
This is it's not about Dirty John. It's about a different guy. But a similar guy. And it's a documentary. It's very good and very like a lot.
Is it our new Tiger King?
I mean, you know what's so funny is I had told I was texting with a couple friends and I told them I was watching it because one of them is very into like this type of story. So I knew she would be into it. And then the other one was like, oh, the Have You Married This Man billboard, because those billboards were all over Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And then when Matt came home, when Matt came out from recording a podcast, he was like, what are you watching? And I was like, Love Fraud. And he was like, oh, Have You Married This Man? And I was like, that was an effective ad campaign. Like, people were able to quote it and like remembered those billboards.
Damn. Okay. Love Fraud. All right.
It's a four-part series, four-part series on Showtime.
So, maybe I'll get into it.
I feel like I think you would enjoy it.
I mean, I have a month before The Bachelorette starts, or a few weeks, so.
Well, there you go.
And I might tune into The Bachelorette this season.
I mean, again, what else are we doing?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, truly, I'm doing a lot of like wandering my home.
Right. Like we are, we are doing things. You're very active in various activities. You're active in activities, Kate.
I am like a school volunteer this year.
I'm so into it. You're so into it. So actually, you are busy. I should just speak for myself.
Well, no, we're both busy, but it's a weird busy. It's busy in the confines of your own space. It's so odd.
It's a very weird busy. So.
Well.
Anyway, shall we take a break?
Yes, because the nice thing is we get to come back and talk to Miralee Patel, and she's just a soothing soul.
She really is. She's also like an inspiration.
Yes, and she's really created such meaningful, beautiful work. So I'm really excited to share our conversation with her. So
yeah, me too.
We will BRB in a moment.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there. The overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done a consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started. And then use our code forever35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough. Enough.
I mean, drawn the line. Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh. Sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift. All while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there, especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups still without the underwire to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
Our guest today is Meera Lee Patel, who is a self-taught artist and writer who believes that anything is possible. She is the author of My Friend Fear, Finding Magic in the Unknown, which is a beautiful meditation on fear, and how it can help us become who we really are if we let it. She is also the author of two journals, Made Out of Stars, which is a journal for self-realization that encourages the belief that we are already whole, and Start Where You Are, a journal for self-exploration that is designed to help others understand that the answers they are seeking are contained within themselves. And she is currently a columnist at Spirituality and Health, where she writes and draws about mental health. And her books are just gorgeous, and we are so excited to have her here today. So thank you for joining us, Meera.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So we like to start chatting with our guests about one self-care practice that they have in their own lives. It can be very small, it can be huge, but something that you do to kind of nourish yourself on a regular basis.
Probably one of the most beneficial things I do is meditate. And I do that in two different ways, which is one is an active meditation, usually that I do with my painting, or way more straightforward and what I usually have more time for, which is journaling or writing in my diary. It's kind of a way to get all of the thoughts that tend to turn anxious and tend to turn cyclical out of my head and onto paper. And I do find the physical act of writing to, you know, visually, it's honestly like reaching inside my own head and physically taking out the thoughts and putting them somewhere else, which really leaves me as a person with a lot more room to breathe and think and function. The other meditation is, a sitting breathing practice, which is just meant to help me kind of recenter and rebalance and calm my body, calm my mind. And this is one that I usually do before bed. I would like it to be the first thing I do when I wake up. But this year, with everything going on, I have been a little bit jolted out of my regular practice. And I'm still finding my way back to setting up that early morning, bringing myself to begin the day in the right way. I'm still working my way back towards that.
You mentioned the feeling of this year kind of jolting you, and I think every person listening can relate. I know I can. I know Dory can. How have you kind of been gentle with yourself and just accepting that things are not going to look like they used to? All your self-care practices may take a minute to kind of recalibrate. How have you kind of dealt with that?
I think this is a great question and so valuable, because it took me many months. We have been, my husband and I have been quarantined since February, and we are very diligent in being careful and cautious with everything going on. And until April, was very hard on myself and very disappointed in myself for the way my productivity went down, the feelings I was having, my inability to remain optimistic or positive, or to just go through my days with the same amount of energy and vigor that I always had. And in April, I was talking to a friend, and she told me, the way that you're talking about yourself, the way you're expressing how disappointed you are in yourself, like, thought you would never talk to me that way. And I don't think you're treating yourself the way you would treat a friend. And it kind of, again, jolted me back into, why am I doing that? And why do so many of us, I think most of us, why do we treat ourselves differently than the way we treat other people? Why are we so much more critical? Why are we so much more unforgiving? And so since then, I've been a lot better about letting myself be, not setting up unrealistic expectations of myself, understanding that one day could be really good, and the toughest thing I could do for myself is to set the expectation that the next day is going to be equal or better. The next day is going to be what it's going to be, and that could be good or bad, but my job is to see it as neither and just to see it as another day. And so that's kind of how I've been trying to recalibrate.
That's such a healthy perspective. I'm going to remember that. Honestly, I'd love to talk about where you are quarantined, because as you put it in the bio in your new journal, you live with your husband, dog, innumerable black vultures, wild turkeys, coyotes, and prancing deer on a farm in the northern woods of Nashville, Tennessee. So I'd love to know about what it was like going from what you've described as a cramped New York apartment to this life, and just kind of how it's changed your notions of yourself and like what you need from the world.
Sure. My journey in getting here was pretty awesome, I would say. It was February 2017. I was still living in Brooklyn. I had two roommates. I lived in a basement apartment. And I had been in New York for all of my adult life, and I was about to begin writing My Friend Fear, which is a book of essays about dealing with fear. And so I'm getting ready to write the book, and I have this horrifying realization, which is that I've never dealt with any of my fears, and how am I going to write a book about it? And so I decided that it all had to happen. And so I did all of the things that I was afraid of all at once, which was I quit my job that I had had for all of my 20s, and that was a symbol of safety and stability for me, even though my desire was to be an artist and a writer. So I quit that.
What was your job at the time?
I was a technical, I was an editor at a technical publishing company. So I edited papers written by electrical engineers. And I had been doing that. I had been doing that straight out of college at 22. And here I was at 29. And I had never known anything else. And I wanted to leave for a very long time, but I was really, really scared to. So I quit that, and I sublet my apartment, and I decided I was going to do something that I was really afraid of, which is travel alone for a year and go to all these places where I didn't know anybody and had never been before, and just be by myself, which is, sometimes for us, the scariest thing we can do is spending copious amounts of time alone, which, everyone is getting a big lesson in right now. So I did.
Yes.
I did that. And in month three, I landed in Nashville. And I had come to Nashville because online I saw that there were a group of women who owned a illustration studio, and they all worked together. And I really wanted community. And I thought, I'm going to reach out and see if they'll let me work with them. And if they say yes, then at least they know where I'm going to be for the month of May. And they said yes. And so I decided that's where I'd be. And I went. And day one, I kind of fell in love with everybody. They were so welcoming, so talented, so motivated, and I just felt right at home. And on day three or four, I met the man who would then become my husband. And we dated for that month, and I kept going. I kept traveling. And in October of that year, I moved to Nashville. And 6 months later, we bought our home where we live now and where we are farming and allowing a lot of guest animals to come be with us.
Wow. That is a huge change.
Yeah, it was a big year.
Were there times when you doubted your decision?
That is a great question also. I never doubted my relationships, my friendships, or the one I had with my husband. But I did feel living here is very different from living in New York or living on the East Coast, which is what I have always known to be my home. And there's differences not only in terms of energy and pace, but also in terms of demographic and the types of people I see and the types of people I'm around. And as a minority woman, it has been an adjustment for me. And I think I'm still adjusting. But the thing that keeps me here and that would also send, you know, make it completely plausible for me to leave is that I want my life to be made up of a lot of different experiences. And so whether it is more difficult to live here in some ways, it is a lot easier in other ways. And remembering that everything in life is a balance always helps me be happy wherever I am. So that's kind of the perspective I try to take. And of course, there are days where I'm like, man, I really miss New York. I really miss, you know, friends that I've known for 30 years and who like really get me. And I miss people that look like me, seeing them every day. But I really believe that everything is temporary. And so I try to enjoy this part of my life right now, which is it looks like nothing that I would have ever dreamed of. And I think that very fact is really awesome.
That's so cool. Mira, let's talk about your new journal, which is called Create Your Own Calm, a journal for quieting anxiety. First of all, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you.
And I loved so many of the prompts in the journal. But one spoke to me so much, which was, you had a prompt about drawing where you feel most peaceful, and it was, you have to draw it inside the outline of a home. And even just reading that prompt and seeing the outline of a home kind of made me feel at peace. And I'm just wondering, where do you feel most peaceful, and what do you hope people get out of this prompt?
With that prompt, I am trying to emphasize the understanding that home can exist within yourself, and that if you feel good about yourself and who you are, it is possible to feel calm and peaceful anywhere. So I really like that symbol of home and that it being a place you always carry with you. And that is ultimately what I'm hoping others will realize and begin to believe, because I think it is a very empowering, I think it's a very empowering belief to know that home is a place that you can carry with you, and that no matter what is changing in outside of yourself, you know, in the world, that is to say, everything is always changing, and change is often our biggest cause of anxiety. Regardless of that, if you have a strong and stable home within yourself, you can always feel at peace. And so that belief is what I'm trying to encourage in that prompt.
I love that.
Can I share my favorite prompt? I loved the naming of anxiety, which is in the beginning of the book, and talking about what your anxiety feels like. Because I, as a person who has struggled with anxiety for their entire lives, it was a really different way of thinking about it, which I thought was really interesting. So I would love to know a little bit more about your own experience with anxiety. If this is something that you've done, if this was a practice that you had already done that you found helpful.
Sure. So I struggle with anxiety daily. It's not something that I believe will ever go away. What I believe is that I can only control how I approach it and how I learn to manage it. And so for me, identifying my fears and identifying the roots under my anxieties have been a huge help in learning how to manage them. So along with identifying the roots, which could be like, I feel really anxious right now because I'm afraid of being rejected, or I feel really anxious right now because I'm afraid of failing at this particular task. Along with identifying those roots and those fears, I also have found it very helpful to be able to notice and recognize what my anxiety feels like. And for me, that's a lot of cyclical thoughts. They start and they do not stop. They intensify to the point where I'm unable to focus on anything else. It's all I can or want to talk about or think about. And probably the worst part is that I start to convince myself that my fear, whatever the fear is, the fear of failure or rejection, for example, those are absolutely without a doubt going to come true. And so the exercise in identification becomes useful for me because I can recognize when it's beginning to start and I can step in before it gets to that point where I've convinced myself that the worst is going to happen. And so with that, with the exercise you read out loud, I'm really encouraging people to take note. Do your palms get sweaty? Is your heart racing? Does your mind either go cloudy or completely blank? Or is it very noisy with tons of voices? What is happening to your body and your mind in these periods of anxiety? And let's work on identifying them so we can recognize them, and therefore we can kind of learn how to curb them when we feel them coming on.
That was one of the first things. It's right at the beginning of the book, and it was like, oh, this is nice. Like, what an interesting way to think about all the things that make me, that rattle me every day. It was just, it was a really cool practice. I feel like your book is this like perfect balance of like, it's very beautiful and pleasing to look at, but also has these really thoughtful, concrete practices that when executed are really impactful. Are these things that you kind of do in your own regular day-to-day as well?
Yes, they are. They're all rooted in my philosophy and how I try my best to operate. Again, not always successfully, but how I would like to operate. And I also really try to make create your own calm inclusive. And what I mean by that is that anxiety looks and feels different for everybody. Its causes are different for everybody. You know, the way it feels, the way it affects us, the solutions that are going to help us manage it, they're all different. And so a lot of the exercises draw from my practices with daily meditation, regular exercise, how nature can be, you know, a very organic soother. And they also focus on identifying places of disconnect in your life, such as, you know, not having meaningful connection to your work or to yourself or to your community. I find that these disconnects can really be pockets of anxiety. And so I tried my best to collect exercises that are governed by all of these different principles, knowing that different people will need different directions to help them. And also that knowing that what we need changes. So, you know, I'm at a period in my life where writing and daily meditation really helps me, but something, a disconnect might appear in my life and I will need to form a practice around kind of fixing that. And so I wanted to make sure it wasn't a one solution fits all, because one solution does not fit all.
Can I ask what your typical work day looks like? I'm always curious how creative people kind of organize their time.
So I am very structured and very type A, which is the opposite of a lot of creatives. And I think that came from a lot of the discipline that I learned in my day job for so long. And also, you know, partly my personality. So I wake up, I wake up early, I eat, and that is when I am the most creative. So that is when I am painting or writing or doing the part of my job that is creative. And that's probably until lunch. And then I have lunch, and then it's all business. So it's a lot of bookkeeping, invoicing, social media, marketing things, emails, which I feel my whole life is one big email. So lots of emails. And then I try to, which this is new. I've never had to do this before, but I try to actually stop working around 5 or 6 so I can be a human being and hang out with my husband and not work. And that's really hard for me because I love working and I love my job and I feel very lucky. And he has been a very big proponent of, you have absolutely no work-life balance, and, you know, maybe we can work on that. So I've been the last couple of years been trying to do that, and it's hard for me, but I'm trying.
Were you that way when you held your previous job in your 20s, or do you think part of it is because your career and your job feeds such a passion for you?
No, it's absolutely habit from when I had my day job, because when I had my day job, I worked 8 hours at that, and then I worked 8 or 10 at freelance to get to a place where I could quit the day job. So I worked, you know, both jobs for about 8 years. And so I think I've just become that way. And to be completely honest, there is a lot of underlying anxiety behind it, which is also something I've been working on. There's a lot of self-worth and value that I've been working on untangling. And I have learned that it's hard for me to value myself if I'm not being productive or if I'm not accomplishing something. And those realizations have been kind of shocking. To understand that those are true and that I don't want to feel that way about myself. So I've been, you know, consciously working on trying to change my subconscious. And it's a long process, but it's, you know, you have to try. So I'm trying.
You have a beautiful a post that you shared on Instagram. How to stop feeling guilty for not being productive, a color palette. Is that related to your own kind of process right now?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so hard. And for so many of us,
it's very, it's something as you're talking, I can recognize that it's something I've struggled with. And certainly untangling like career from my identity and how I identify and get my worth it's been an ongoing struggle for years, for sure. Yes.
I saw someone recently post that there's an exercise where you have to describe yourself without saying what you do for a living.
Oh my goodness.
And that's really hard.
Yeah. I don't even know.
But I think
what
it does
say.
Speak to this, you know. Yeah, exactly. Like, who are we if we are not our jobs?
Mm-hmm. Oof. That's a scary question.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, it's a good one.
It's a great one.
Dory, we should do that sometime. Yeah, I feel like it's interesting to consider the things we want to name about ourselves that have nothing to do with our work. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Sorry, Kate, I feel like I cut you off.
No, now I'm kind of like thrown thinking about this.
Sorry about that.
No, this is great. This is why your books are so good, Mira. They're so good. They really help you ponder this stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, they really do. I also loved your big dreams exercise because it is really hard to name your big dreams and acknowledge them. And there is something so powerful about putting them to paper.
Yeah, I think it's hard for many of us to have big dreams. I think we are burdened by what we think is practical or possible, and that really limits our imaginations. Mm. And so it can be, you know, that it's similar to how do you describe yourself if we're not talking about our jobs or careers. I find that question to be one that stumps us, where, you know, it's like, well, I've never thought about that because I've thought about how to take care of my family or how to make sure I can cover my healthcare or whatever. There's such a limit that we place on ourselves. And so I really like to ask people, I really like to ask myself, you know, if I stop being afraid, if I don't feel so anxious, like what other possibilities are within me? And what can I even dare to imagine?
Hmm. That's really profound.
It still feels so scary. I'm 41. I wonder if it ever feels easier. But there's something nice I find in knowing, like, you are a person who makes this work, but you also experience these same feelings. I don't think it's not like you're saying, like, I've got this figured out, everybody.
No,
but you're a participant as well as the person guiding us.
I try to emphasize that very much because, you know, after I wrote My Friend Fear, people are like, cool, so you're done being scared, right? And it's the opposite. You know, I feel scared every day, but what I've learned is how to not let that keep me from living a life, how to not let that keep me from being who I am. And so it's the same thing in Create Your Own Calm, where I'm an anxious person and I feel okay with that. And I'm learning how to manage it. And I'm learning how to not let it debilitate me. And that is what is within my control. And so that's what I'm working on. And I'm working on it right with you guys.
Can we just touch on your work for Spirituality and Health magazine? You had written recently about friendship, and you laid out some guidelines for people, which I think really resonated with both Dory and I. One was nourish and nurture your existing friendships, plant seeds for the relationships you want to have, cull the unhealthy ones. How have you, or what are some ways you might suggest to people on how they can kind of cultivate and grow friendships while we're also living through a pandemic?
Oh, that's a great question. I know that it is very difficult right now while it's so hard to, you know, see people in person, and so much of a beautiful friendship is seeing someone's face and looking at them in the eyes and being able to share yourself and feel seen and help the other person feel seen. So I know that those boundaries right now are difficult to manage, but I would say that there's a lot of room for thoughtfulness right now. There's a lot of room for surprise. And I think one of the kindest things you could do is be conscious of the times throughout your day when you find yourself thinking about a friend and act on it. because so many of our thoughts, we have, we have a billion thoughts every second and we don't act on any of them. And this is also one of them. So if you think of a friend and, I'll be walking in the yard and I'll see a bluebird or something like that. And I'll think, oh my goodness, like this person would love that. And I try to take a picture or I draw it later and I send it to them and I say, hey, I saw this. It really made me think of you. I miss you or how are you or anything. So those are rooms for thoughtfulness that I think go a long way with existing friendships. And they don't have to be ones that you are talking to regularly. It could be somebody that you kind of fell out of touch with but thought of. I mean, that's a great way to reach out and reconnect. And I think the pandemic might also be helping people who have been experiencing toxic friendships. Hopefully, it has given you some breathing space away from them and some room to identify them and realize either, I don't miss this person at all. And now with some space, I realize that they haven't been a positive asset in my life, or they were bringing a lot of negative energy, and I feel so much freer now with that space from them. And that is helping you identify who you would like to pull closer and make more of an effort with and who you're willing to let go of. And I think that is one of the healthiest things you can do for yourself. I know I wrote about this article because I know that telling people to get rid of people in their lives is not such a attractive thing to say out loud or to advocate for. But I truly believe that, you have limited time and energy, not only in your day and with your hours, but in your heart and with your spirit and with your body. And you should share those things that are so precious of yourself with people who, not only care and appreciate them, but who also have the capacity and the desire to share themselves with you in a positive way. And so I'm always advocating for neutral and mutual friendships, ones that make you feel good and understood and that aren't so charged, not ones where you're afraid to tell them something all the time or that you're afraid of being judged or anything. Like, those feelings shouldn't exist so often in a friendship. And so I do encourage people to, leave people behind.
Oh, that's a really powerful, I think that's a powerful note to end on. Oh, that was great. Mira, this has been so great to get to talk to you.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure.
Really enjoyed hearing.
I've had a great time. Thank you for having me.
Mira, where can our listeners find you online, find more information about you and your books?
You can find out more about me and my work and my books online at miralee.com. And I share regularly about my process and thoughts and everything I'm making on Instagram at Mira Lee Patel.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article, and I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping and they were like, we see you, we honor you. Mm-hmm. and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. I have some gorgeous planters. And then my favorite, my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs. Oh. Including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. And you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Dory?
Yes.
We are B.
We are. And I just really enjoy talking to Mira.
I did too. Her books are beautiful.
Beautiful.
And I will say, as a person riddled with anxiety, I found her exercises very useful and like really, I don't know. They just, they tapped into like a lot of the challenges in my brain.
Totally. All right. Well, how did your meditations go?
I would say I did one, and then I did one, and then I did do another sleep story actually just last night, which I'm going to clump into the meditation space. Ooh. Because I did the one that I recommended a few weeks ago on a mini app.
Ooh.
The Nordland Trained Sleep Story.
Ooh.
Narrated by a man named Eric Bra. Let me tell you, I was so into it. I had the same thing up top that I always do. I was like, there's no, I'm going to fall asleep. Like this guy talking about this train through Norway, I'm going to fall asleep. Like, no, I'm wide awake. And then I was like, zonk. And so I just really love these freaking sleep stories. But so I'm going to count that. I'm going to count that.
I think that's fine.
And I'm going to try to keep at it. I really like it. Calm also, not to keep plugging Calm here. Again, this is, they advertise in the podcast, but this is not part of the promotion. But they also do like a nice thing where you do a meditation and then you can note, like you can reflect on how you felt after. I like that too. It's all in the app. Anyway, sorry. But I did want to note that listening to this train story, which starts in Trondheim, it's Norway, made me want to go to Norway. So do we have listeners in Norway? Like, should I, when this pandemic is all over, should I come to Norway and like tour around?
As someone who has been to Norway.
First of all, that blows my mind. I didn't know this about you.
I have been to Norway. I spoke at a, what even was it? Was it a conference? I forget exactly what it was, but Norwegians paid for me to come over there and speak about BuzzFeed in like 2013, I think. And I was there for a few days. It was delightful, I will say.
it's super expensive. It's very, very, very expensive for Americans to go there. But it was really, really lovely. I went in the summer and it was light until like 11 p.m., which is so bizarre.
Yes, I experienced that once in Northern Ireland and it was insane. It made
it's
me feel
really
crazy.
Weird. Yeah. I wish I had had more time there to like go to some fjords, but I was only in Oslo. But it was very, very cool. It made me want to go back.
Well, look, when this pandemic is over and we travel the globe with this podcast, can we take a stop in Norway?
Yes, I'm down.
Norwegians, if you're out there, I need to know more about visiting your country. Take me to Trondheim. Send me on the Nordland train.
Yes.
Okay, sorry. I sound out of my mind, but truly what I wouldn't give to travel to another land right now.
Oh, no, I'm right there with you.
Anyway, this week, Dory, my intention is to schedule my mammogram.
Ooh.
Because boob care is self-care, and I got to get these boobs checked out.
I have had two mammograms.
In your lifetime?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've only had one, so I'm ready to catch up with you.
Have you had to do an ultrasound?
I have not. And I have dense breast tissue, but they did not ask for one last time. So now I haven't.
I wonder if like, well, no, I'm actually not going to say this. Yeah, I've had to do ultrasounds and they're fine. Like, I feel like for so long, a mammogram was built up in my head as this like big, scary thing. And like, it was actually fine.
Yeah, I didn't find it that bad. And the nurses were so wonderful. And like, clearly I was like, I'm new. And they were like, you know, they've done it 8 million times and know how to put everybody at ease. So
totally.
You also have to schedule a mammogram. Let's all do it together this week.
Yay.
All right. Enough about me and Norway and boobs. Dory, did you clear your head this last week?
Yeah. It was really nice to not just try not to think about my book, especially since like the two weeks like leading up to the due date, I was just kind of working around the clock on the book, and it was really intense. And so it was nice to be able to just like relax. So yes, I think I did successfully clear my head.
You sound relaxed.
Thank you so much.
Seriously.
And then this week, I mean, I kind of alluded to this earlier in the show, but my intention this week is to just make another challah.
I was wondering if that was going to be your intention. I love it. I love it for you.
Thank you so much.
Will you make the challah and then maybe also do like a little Shabbat candle prayer situation? Or is it more just the practice of the bread is your prayer?
When you talk about religion, it's very funny.
It's like very, very much a agnostic person talking about like idealizing religion.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't have candlesticks. And it's like a thing I keep meaning to get, but I haven't gotten them yet. So I don't really have candles to light per se. But if and when I procure some candlesticks, then yes, I will probably do that. I did say the prayer over the bread with Henry.
Oh, that's so cool.
And he was like, give me the bread.
Henry knows what's up. He's like, just fucking hand me the carbs and move out of the
seriously.
Way.
Seriously. Like, what are we waiting for?
Oh, I love a good challah. Mm. The inside of a challah bread.
I mean, what could be better?
I didn't even know what challah was until I went to my first bat mitzvah.
Wow.
That's called living a sheltered life.
Wow. Yeah.
I was like, oh, there's bread involved in this religion? And then like, it's left inside the synagogue. And after my friend's bat mitzvah, I can go and eat it. All right.
Yeah. All right. Well, Kate, it's been a pleasure.
A blast. A blast as usual.
Yes.
And now I'm just chuffed to get to say that Forever 35 is hosted and produced by Dory Shafrir and Kate Spencer and produced and edited by Sammy Junio, and Sam Reed is our project manager, and our network partner is Acast. And we will talk to you later.
Bye.